are here, as usual, with my co-host, Scott McCloud. As we've about to hop on, we have breaking news. By the time you listen to this, it won't be breaking news. And any take we have will be heard 10 times by anyone else. But Dustin Johnson has tested positive for COVID-19, and there's probably our first big name in our sport to test positive. So initial thoughts, Scott.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking about that. We had joked sort of Webb Simpson was probably the biggest name up till now. But obviously DJ not going to be playing at the CJ Cup at Shadow Creek. And, you know, the PGA Tour, this is big for them. They've got a 2-week sort of bubble in Las Vegas. But for DJ to test positive, obviously this will bring a lot more attention to it. Don't know totally what the circumstances are. His quote from it was, obviously, I'm very disappointed, said Johnson. I was really looking forward to competing this week, but we'll do everything I can to return as quickly as possible. I've already had a few calls with the tour's medical team and appreciate all the support and guidance they have given me. So
he's not
really
claiming
not much to it.
He's not claiming false narrative or like, I feel fine. Because a lot of these guys, I feel fine, you know, no symptoms. But he's saying, you know, he has it, like he's agreeing to it.
Yeah, so he was experiencing symptoms, so he notified the tour, administered a test, and he was positive, so had to withdraw. So, it begs the question, I mean, you know, how many more will we see? And especially now as we head towards the majors, another major, the Masters now is less than a month away, what's going to be the situation and who's going to be the player that cannot play at the Masters? Coming up that has turned positive. So
it would be a shame if Bryson couldn't make it. No, but I think if you had DJ on your betting chart for COVID, I think it was a good bet based on how he seems to, you know, live his lifestyle according to Instagram, you could say. But yeah. It is impressive that none of the big names have really got it yet. However, the big names are the guys that are going to be traveling private. They're able to avoid airports and things like that. So that shouldn't actually shock you. For a sport, though, that, you know, is played outside where a lot of people, and, you know, maybe we'll talk about kind of the financial side of things in the article coming out about and podcast coming out around how hard it is for women's golf and on the finance side. But, you know, for a side where a lot of the lower end guys, you know, they pay for their own travel and they find ways around, we are having low numbers, which is pretty good, showing the bubble is working. But DJ, the first big name, and hopefully this is one of the last, because I think a Masters without DJ, considering how good he's been, would suck right now. A CJ Cup without DJ, I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some superstars playing this week. It becomes a little bit more significant. But like you said, it becomes the majors. We know Brooks Koepka is back now. We're starting to get more of those top 10 players getting back in action, getting ready for the majors. And like you said, I mean, for this to happen for DJ, again, you know, we don't know the circumstances. You never know what the situation is. But you mentioned, you know, the top players of the game are able to keep themselves as safe as possible, as isolated as possible by, you know, private jets, that sort of situation. You know, they can have chefs, whatever the case may be. You know, you would expect it maybe from the other players that sort of have to go in and out and all over the place. But for him, that maybe, you know, points to things that are away from the golf course rather than, you know, at the golf course and the environment that the PGA Tour has created to, and the LPGA Tour and all these other tours have created to keep players safe.
Yeah, I think with DJ, though, he lives in Florida. I'm sure he's actually being safe. I was just trying to be facetious and funny. I'm sure it went over well, as all my jokes usually do. But he does live in Florida. Things aren't great down there. They've kind of just pretended it doesn't exist and they're going on. So who knows? He could have went to the grocery store and had that happen. So it's unfortunate. We hope everything, you know, the best for him and his family. But I'm hoping this isn't a trickle-down effect, and hopefully no one else on this week tests positive, and hopefully we can continue, you know, having this great run for the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour. The PGA Tour did play last week. Matt Wolf ended up getting into a playoff, but Martin Laird just somehow hung on and hung on. I guess Austin Cook was there too. Sorry, Austin. Did you see that bunker shot, though, where he was basically in? You know how they say don't go into a bunker or out of a bunker on the steep spot? It looked like someone basically did that. It looked like he was just sitting in somebody's footprint, somehow holes it out, ends up getting into a playoff, wins on the second playoff hole. Exciting finish for sure for a probably lower end tournament. And Matt Wolf, there he is at the top yet again.
Martin Laird, interesting win there for a number of reasons, and this is notable. Obviously, a lot of people are looking at talking about the driving distance and how things are happening. You know, Bryson was kind of in the mix early on, but, you know, not that Martin Laird is short, but he ranks fairly far down there now on the tour as far as driving distance is concerned, winning it in other ways. This just shows you that players can win in other ways. Just driving by itself is not only the thing that's going to get it done. The other side that was interesting as well is he's a very mixed bag. If you look at his golf equipment, the number of brands that were in his bag was unbelievable. Be it, you know, irons, driver, wedges, everything was almost everything was different in his bag. So that's kind of interesting for players to look at from an agnostic approach and see that here's a guy who maybe doesn't garner the same level of attention he did previously in his career. He's kind of getting all on there a little bit in his career, but just using the golf clubs that will, you know, do the best job for him and getting the job done without having to hit it 380 yards. Although, you know, like I said, he's not short on distance, but he's short relative to the rest of the tour.
No, yeah, he definitely has quite the bag. Ping driver, Titleist Woods, or sorry, just one Titleist Wood, a TaylorMade Wood. I believe he's rocking some Strixon irons, some Cleveland wedges, like all across the board, which kind of gets to my next point around Kevin Chappell doing this, actually not signing a deal for a bag sponsor, but rather signing a deal with a fitting company. Great article about that and how they ended up finding a full bag for him. You probably know more about the company and this agreement. So what are you hearing about how this all came to be?
Yeah, well, I didn't hear too many details on it yet. I mean, I'll delve into it a little bit more with a few people from the company. But I think for TruSpec, which is a big fitting company, they want to basically showcase the fact that, you know, they are an agnostic fitter. So basically not dedicated to one particular brand, and that they do that for their customers. And what they wanted to do was showcase their company and the services that they provide by doing that with a tour player and showing, you know what, let's optimize what a tour player does. And really, it can do great things for them. If, you know, Chappell obviously has some success, which, you know, already he is, it just shows that there's a reliability to that, that you can go about getting the best equipment for you, not necessarily by the brand alone. I mean, the name on the club does not guarantee success. Obviously, every manufacturer is trying to create the best products possible, but too many amateurs, unfortunately, you look and they have one brand in their whole bag. That may work. That may be the best approach for them, but in most cases, it's not. So this is just about optimizing and showing the services of a good club fitter and how that can help even a tour player.
It's true. But it also got me thinking too, as you know, is this something that only can happen on the men's side of the game? Are women actually able to do this type of thing just based on the lower costs? And that's the big topic right now is, you know, the actual financial burdens that the LPGA players take on versus the men's tour players, and that the money the men are playing for isn't life-changing money for a lot of them, and that going out and being able to take less money from a equipment standpoint and actually just put in what's best for them actually can make them more money in the end, where the women might not be able to do that. And I think it's going to be a good topic that we're going to bring up with Mel and Dez, as we talked about last week. They are on this podcast again, but it's been a hot topic of late, is just the big difference in the money between the men's game and the women's game. And I guess there's a new podcast coming out just basically around all this right now as well.
Yeah, there's a certain freedom, I guess, of to be able to do that. I mean, we've talked before about some players saying, you know what, for the money that's available beyond the top level of players, really, you know, you're just trying to get the equipment that's best for you. And really, the LPGA, if you look at it, because these players are not in a position where, you know, they're not offered large financial contracts, in some cases, it actually probably shows you, and again, we relatively relate the LPGA game to the average amateur, not from a skill level standpoint, but from maybe from a clubhead speed standpoint, of the fact that, you know, the average golfer can relate more to what the LPGA players make use of. And you'll find that a lot of the LPGA Tour players, because they don't have a lot of the tour support, equipment trailers out on the tour, there's limited amount of support out there, they'll tend to go to club fitters and, you know, people that they know near where they live and get fitted for equipment that way. And then maybe reach out to manufacturers to get some equipment sent to them. But in most cases, they end up with more mixed bags than you would see on the PGA Tour or the European Tour.
Yeah, I wonder if Mel does that type of thing as well. So I'm looking forward to chatting with some gear with her and Dez. We've been waiting for this podcast for a long time. They're on an off week right now, coming off a win and then a solid week at the PGA. We would keep you and talk about all our thoughts about DJ and potentially how maybe he fell down some stairs to get COVID. But why listen to us when you can listen to these two? I promise you, this is a great interview. You've heard Dez and his stories. And if I were you, I'd go back to our first ever episode and listen to his stories then and see how far he's come. And I know we're going to be talking a lot about the progress of his career, but also Mel's progress as well. So I don't know about you, Scotty. I'm excited. Where's your head at getting to get these two in a room?
Yeah, I think it's always interesting not only to have the player, but to have the caddy as well, because there's a true dynamic there that's very important, especially when it comes to winning. And I think Mel will probably, you know, share that a little bit, and Des will as well, of how the teamwork helps make everything work and make it better for both of them and lead them to more success. So yeah, I'm very interested to hear their side of it.
Yeah, and without further ado, let's bring them on, Mel Reid and Ryan DeVoe. All right, folks, we would like to welcome back to the podcast one of our favorites, finally picks up his first win as an LPGA Tour caddy. But without this woman, it wouldn't have been possible. Mel Reid and Ryan DeVoe, the team that everybody's been watching over the last couple of weeks, the best celebration in all of professional golf after a win. How are you two today?
Well, I think we're good. I mean, we're still standing, so we're doing all right.
The leg's a little shaky. The celebration hasn't stopped.
Definitely not. Nah. Well, we got in trouble the first time we celebrated, so we thought we'd celebrate properly without getting in trouble. So
my celebration was walking 18 holes at the KPMG and walking away standing, so we're doing all right.
So what do you mean, though, you got in trouble? What, do you mean the celebration on 18 at the ShopRite was just a little too much for the LPGA Tour?
Not necessarily. Like, we get COVID rules, which I completely understand. And, you know, we knew we wanted to celebrate in a pub. Obviously, I'm British, he's Canadian. Like, we wanted to celebrate in a pub. And yeah, that probably wasn't the best decision, but we did it anyway because we felt like, I mean, you know.
Obviously, Mel had been waiting a little longer than I had, but we both felt that we've obviously been respecting the rules the whole season, and we're more than happy that the LPGA has given us the opportunity to play. But I think we both thought it'd be a little disservice to the hard work that we both put in.
And the community.
Yeah.
And the community.
We just gave the people what they wanted. But no, we certainly weren't trying to disrespect any rules or anyone, but we wanted to
celebrate,
we wanted to smash some pints, so we did.
So how hard was it to have to go through the KPMG week, because obviously it's a major, but you're wanting to celebrate? I mean, how difficult was that, and how much were you thinking about this week off?
I took it a bit more seriously. Des was so banged up that I literally walked out and I was like, do you need to go home? And he's like, ooh, I can't even speak. So I was a bit more sensible than Des, but Des was saying for a couple of days for sure. But yeah,
not in the sense of like taking KPMG seriously. I just took celebrating a lot more seriously.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it's both our goals to win on tour and obviously,
moment.
When that happened, we were both excited. We actually, whether we were going to win or not, we had both planned to leave that night. But the tournament director, who was also with us that night when we were celebrating, was kind enough to give us a room. So we decided to stay that night. And Mel came and practiced a little bit on Monday. I went and walked the 18 holes.
Crawled.
Yeah.
Crawled the 18
holes. Yeah. I was doing a crab walk, probably doing that, but. No, it was just a subdued enough celebration for Mel. I obviously sent it, but yeah, just just really happy for Mel. And obviously, we really enjoyed that night. And the focus shifted very quickly once we got to KPMG.
Well, let's talk about the 18th hole at ShopRite. A long time standing over those two putts to finish. What was that conversation like? I saw Dez a little bit in your ear at that moment. What were you talking about in those final moments? It felt like an eternity for me watching for both of you, but what were you two thinking?
So I hit that shot into 18, hit 6-iron out the rough. And I said to Fultzy, who is one of the guys who works for Golf Channel, I was like, where is that? Like, we didn't see it finish. He's like, it's 15 foot. So I looked at Dez and I said, we good, yeah? He's like, mate, you good. Like, they have to eagle it for you to, yeah, you could three putt this and you're still good. So, yeah, he was a good boy. And, yeah, couldn't have done it with anyone better, to be honest with you. Like, I'm really glad he's by my side and part of the team. And, yeah.
I mean, we both, like, so obviously there's no leaderboards out there. And obviously I've okayed it with the rules officials that I can check the scores on my phone. Obviously on huge par save on 15, great putt after an awful lie from the chip that she executed pretty much as well as she could have. Rolls on a great putt on 15. I know we have a 4-shot lead on 16T. We get to 17. It's a very short par 4. Par 3. Par 4 for me. But obviously our play there is just to play safe. Both the girls, it had to have been the best two shots of the day. We have a 4-shot lead. They both stick it in close. We got a bit unlucky to roll off the front. Good chip, and just the par putt didn't go in. I think Fulty had actually said on the air that when I signaled them that the 6-iron, because we were like 220.
Yeah, that's what we're laying up.
210 front, but we knew it was going to be a flyer, and obviously we know it's going to run up from that lie. And you can't really see the approach shot that we're hitting, where it's going to go. Shot looks completely perfect in the air. Takes a great first bounce. The left falls off. And as soon as we ask him where it is and it's 15 feet away, obviously, to your point, asking about what we were talking about, I knew the scenario we were in. We're up two. Once both of them don't make eagle, I go up to her and just say, hit a good putt, but you've got three from here. Obviously, cozies it up there. And yeah, you guys obviously saw the result at the end, but yeah, it was just a great result.
I mean, Mel, for you, I mean, what were your thoughts at that time? I mean, you knew, you know, everything going into this and how important this was to you, but did you keep yourself focused on, you know, just getting it done more than anything?
Yeah, honestly, like, because I hate to word the word in the zone, but like, you're so focused on like the task at hand, like you don't really pay much attention to anything else. Like, honestly, like I felt really calm. Yeah, you really don't like get relief until you've actually held that putt. Honestly, it's kind of a weird feeling. I guess that's why, you know, the best of the best, like the guys that win or the girls that win every single, you know, season, they have that feeling and you just got to be in the zone. So yeah, honestly, I was really calm the whole time. And, yeah, so I thought I can't three putt from 15 foot, like, you know. But yeah, so yeah, it was a cool feeling. It was a cool moment.
So Dez had the sunglasses on, you didn't, and you guys had quite the hug at the end. I need to know who had tears first, because I thought I saw something coming down Dez's face there.
So Dez didn't cry at that moment. When he'd had about 4 or 5 balls, the waterworks came on. He literally was bawling his eyes out on the pub. I was like, bro, you're right. He's like, I'm just champions. It's like, all right, come here. Like, gave him a big hug, and I was like, it's all right, mate. So,
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Obviously, we had a lot to do right after the tournament. Obviously, the first call was to my parents, who obviously have supported me through golf and not in golf. They were the first call I made, and I kind of teared up, and then we got into the, you know, 18th hole and the celebrations and stuff. But a lot of people have asked me about, you know, how it feels to win, and I've been in here for 6 years, and I it's gonna sound cliche, but obviously it means a lot to me. But I found myself being so much happier for Mel and having her show the belief she's shown in me and the response she's had to me. And we've only been together, I think, 8 or 10 events, but feels like we've been together a couple of years. And just obviously to, you know, just to have a front row seat and see something like that happen and someone you consider a very close friend, yeah, I just found myself being a lot more happy for her.
It def does feel like you guys have been together for 2 years at least this point, and success right off the bat seems to be working. But you know, I you and I were texting right after Dez, and I remember just saying to you, like, no, man, you deserve this too. But even at that point, he was probably already done his crying. But even at that point, he was still like, I just can't, I'm just more proud for Mel. So it just shows where this relationship is in, that you both are just really proud for each other and this tight team that you've become. That being said, Mel, has Dez just moved into your house? I feel like every week he's just...
Yeah, without my consent as well. He's moved his way in.
My rent checks are bouncing.
Yeah, we eventually cleaned his bedroom and his bathroom the other day, which was not a pretty sight. But the boy's moved in officially. Yeah, he's moving up to... We're going to move to Jacksonville, in November. My girl's got a new job, so at the PGA Tour. So he's moving in with us.
I've heard about
that. He's basically our little third roommate. We never thought we'd enjoy a man so much in our house, but apparently we do. So
they wanted a dog, and they got me.
Yeah, I wanted a dog, and this was the consolation prize was Dez. So.
Here's the problem, though: he never brings girls home anyway, right?
No,
so
exactly.
It's like,
no, exactly.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
Yeah. I'm just like a dog. All I bring home is like stray pieces and stuff. Yeah, like exactly. I'll walk in the door and be like, "Look what I got."
Yeah. Jesus.
I mean, Mel, you talked about it in the press conference afterwards about, you know, Dez feels like a brother, a little brother. I mean, how is it that you bonded so quickly with, especially a guy from Napanee, Ontario, Canada?
Exactly. I know. I never thought I'd like a Canadian so much.
You had Nate, too.
No, I did. I did have Nate.
I didn't realize Nate was on your bag.
He's at Q School.
Third or fourth? Or pretty good
close. Result, seventh. Yeah, close.
Yeah,
it's close enough. We'll take third.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like I knew Dez before and I knew that we were kind of friends, but I don't know. I just had a feeling about him and like my coach did as well. And so, you know, the connection happened and yeah, it's been one of the best things I've ever done. He's my boy. So.
So what was the worst or weirdest drink that, was had out of the trophy after, that night? I saw a lot of beer going in it. What else went in that trophy that night?
It was just beer.
Mostly Yingling.
Yeah.
I think we got there. And, so when we got there, there's a little pub and, we were at the tournament director. And as soon as we walked in, he was like, everybody out. It was just us in there. And then, he's like, what do you guys want? And I said, I think we'll take 15 Yinglings, filled that up pretty quick. I only thought I had 4 or 5 fireballs. Mel's informed me I've had 15.
I definitely bought you at least 10.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense with the way I felt the morning after. But Yingling was
Yingling's
the choice.
Yingling's the beer of choice, mm-hmm. for sure.
I mean, we're in Pennsylvania, so you gotta go Yingling.
I mean, how important was it to win a tournament that had a trophy that you could put drinks in?
I know. I was just very thankful that it was the size that it was. I was like, I can fit a lot of beers in here. This is the perfect trophy to win.
Well, we chirp trophies all the time. Like, I don't know if you've seen the one in Bermuda. It's like a triangle. And then the one in California, it looked like they just grabbed an old barrel and just like stamped a trophy on it. So absolutely, this is the perfect trophy for a hockey fan like Dez. Unfortunately, his Dallas Stars weren't drinking out of the trophy.
Oh, ask her about that. Ask her about watching those games with me.
A shrine every single week. And he is... obsessive is not even the word. Yeah. He's obsessed.
Well, like, it seems he's converted you too. Now you were wearing a
today.
Dallas Stars shirt the other day.
Dude, we got home. Well, home. Now I'm the roommate. So I arrived a day after her from KPMG and got back, and she was nice enough to pick me up from the airport. And we must have been sitting for about an hour. And I'm sitting on the couch in the living room. She goes, Dez, I got a surprise for you. I was like, okay. And hear her rustling around in her room, and she comes out, and obviously I haven't bought it for her, and she's wearing a Dallas Stars hoodie, and I was just like, this is one of the best presents I've ever received that's not actually for me. She's a fan now, I think, right?
Apparently so.
You got to support him.
Apparently so. Join him, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Obviously, Dez was pretty excited, you know, about the
win. Should tell him the story about A&A.
Oh my God. So A&A, right. So they obviously win the conference.
Yeah. It was to go up 3-1 against Vegas.
So he's like dancing around like a complete twat, and he's like, oh, I just, he was like looking at his phone. I was like, what's going on? So he goes outside to have a drink or whatever. And all of a sudden, these three like policemen show up, like cops show up
at our house at A&A.
House at A&A, and they're like, oh, you called an emergency number. I was like, what? They're like, Ryan. I was like, oh, that's my caddy. He's literally in here. Do you want to go and look at him? And they're like, no. It's like, did they beat LA? I was like, yeah, they beat Vegas. And he's like, all right, good, you good to go.
So I had thrown my phone celebrating the win, and it went to an SOS emergency call. And I've like spent an hour and a half dancing, or a minute and a half dancing, sorry. And I look at my phone, it's like emergency SOS, and I was just like, hang on. And like 10 minutes later, I get this call from California, and like, obviously you don't pick up random calls that call you. And then so, yeah, I'm sitting in that kitchen having a beer, and all of a sudden there's a knock at the door, and they're like, the police sirens are there, and they're like, hey, is everyone all right here? And Mel's just like, no, just my idiot caddy who's celebrating a win.
We are, but he's not. But, you know, the first time you're on this podcast, you're talking about this time where you were in a motel and all the cops showed up. Because like a murder took place right by the motel.
At Notre Dame, and I was on Symetra. No.
I'm starting to think maybe.
Have me? Do you think they're following me?
I think you're part. Yeah.
There's one common denominator here, and it's you.
I mean, yeah. I pay taxes in America. Like, I'm fine. Like, you know, they want. I think they want me here. I don't know.
But here's the
Trump
problem.
Might not, but
you bring up paying taxes in America too much that I'm wondering if you actually don't, because it definitely. Like even over
no,
text.
I do. I'm willing to show my tax return to the people.
Okay. You know? All right, Trump.
I do. I'm good.
At least you will.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a great reaction to your win, Mel. What did that mean to you? I mean, so many players, so much reaction on social media by fans, everything. You know, did that add to the moment for you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like the amount of messages and like obviously the people that came on the 18th green, like that meant more to me than anything. Like, I don't know. It was an overwhelming amount of support. And like, you know, I've been an overnight success for like 15 years. And so it was just nice to get it done. And just the people that, like, it's not just me that did it. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a bunch of, you know, friends, family, my team, you know, everyone that's been through the whole, you know, shit with me, I guess. Like it just meant a lot to me that like so many people messaged me. And that's honestly like was the happiest bit of it was, just the support I got was just, it was unreal, honestly. Like you can't explain it.
Why do you think you have that much support? I think a lot of people expect that much support.
Wow. I'm gonna... Try again.
I've been on the Dez beverages today.
You've been on the McGettigan's.
Yeah. I mean, why do you feel you have that much support that you have that many people coming out to 18? That does not happen regardless of which tour you're on.
I don't know. Maybe because people, I don't know. Like I've messed up a lot in my life. I've done a lot of good things. Like I like to try and be authentic. Like maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Like I think people can relate to the struggles I've been through, and you know, everyone's got their own struggles, and you know, I've been through a few, and so maybe that's what it is. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, that honestly meant more to me than winning in a way. Like just the amount of like messages and support, and you know, it was just cool because you know they've been through a lot with me as well, and so yeah, it was just it's honestly like you can't even comment on it. Like it was just sick.
How was this different for you than winning on the LET? Because obviously, you know, you're a multiple time winner there, but LPGA being what it is, why was it different?
Well, I think the depth of talent, honestly, on the LPGA is like, it's hard. Like it's hard to win on the LPGA, very hard. The girls are good. Like they don't get enough recognition for what they do. You know, it's like a hot topic right now, but like the girls are very good. Very, very good. You know, there's 30, 40 girls that can win every single week. Like, that's how good they are. So to come out on top is like, it's life changing, honestly. And so that's probably why it's different. Like, I feel like the talent out in the LPGA is so
deep.
So deep and so yeah. Like.
I mean, you see it with like.
People don't talk about
like,
how good they are.
Like Popoff, you know, like it's the kind of thing where if you get an opportunity on the LPGA tour and obviously, you know, the viewership isn't there that we feel like should be there right now. But if you are an amateur golfer and you go and watch the LPGA, in my opinion, and I've told you guys this before, you are going to learn more and take way more to your game than you would ever take watching them, not to take away from their talent, but I just
it's more relatable.
Yeah, it's more relatable, and it's a lot better quality. And I've been the first to admit this when I got involved in the women's game. It's a lot better quality than people think that it is, and
it's a better viewing experience live too. Like way more feels like you're part of it. The women do a much better job of, you know, you're not just in the way. Right. And
definitely.
Dez, you and I have both been part of the men's game, and Scott as caddies, right? Like very much so. There's always that guy. It doesn't matter whether you're on McKenzie tour up to the PGA tour. There's a guy in that group that views the fans as just in their way, where the ladies recognize why everybody's there.
Definitely. Right. And I feel like obviously this is a unique year with COVID, but when there are fans, it's such an enjoyable experience if you're a fan or whether you want to get closely involved or not. It's the girls appreciate everyone there. They, you know, it's a very unique viewing
experience. It's a different experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that same vein though, you know, obviously you've been vocal, Mel, about, you know, the equality issues, which are obviously are very important. How do you feel now about, you know, starting to see events like KPMG, the Women's Open as well, starting to go to great venues, which are deserved and that they should be there? Do you think it's getting there, or is it still a long way behind?
I mean, we've still got a long way to go, but like that's what we want. Like, we want to play Muirfield, we want to play, you know, Pebble Beach. Like, that's the courses that we want to play at. Like, we see the guys play it, you know, on their rota every single year for the U.S. Open, the, you know, PGA Championship, and we want to do that. Like, we want to play these golf courses. Like, I can't tell you enough, like, how much, like, KPMG especially have, like, stepped up the game, like, golf courses. Like, now I feel like the U.S. Open have to step up the game.
Yeah, they really
made
USGA step up.
Like, they made a lot of other big tournaments, like, step up to the plate, and it's done wonders for golf. So, you know, big respect to KPMG and PGA of America.
I've always said, and they didn't, I don't remember if they've done it since, but the year Michelle Wee won, they played the same venue. They're both at
Pinehurst,
back to back. That should be it every single year, back to back. Unfortunately, the women are always going to get the second end of the stick, and it's going to be in worse condition, and there's a lot of crap to do with that. But just put it on level playing fields, it would be way more entertaining. And who doesn't want 2 weeks of a golf course? By the second week, you know, like, oh, they can't miss left here because I just watched so-and-so miss left last week, made double. I think the U.S. Open should be there every single year. But in terms of even the paychecks still, you talked about the viewership's lower. The viewership's also lower because they put the LPGA on, like, in the middle of, like, everything else going on. Like, even last week, I thought that was one of the biggest jokes. I get why they did it, to try to get creative, but having the leaders tee off at like 8 a.m, like it's getting to the point where it's like, let's allow them to show the game that they have out there, not just try to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's a catch-22, isn't it? Like, we need more TV time, but we need more money for TV time. Like, it is a huge, like, I would not like Mike Wan's job, honestly. Like, it's very difficult, and I think that he is doing the best that he can in the situation that he's given, but we just want more TV time. Like, there was 17 players that had a better, you know, greens and regulation than Rory McIlroy last year on the LPGA. Like, we're good. Like, just show us, like, just give us a little bit of respect, and like,
and you'll see it's worth watching. Yeah. You'll see the quality is there. Yeah, for sure. I agree.
Absolutely. And then if we talk about the money side of things, and maybe, you know, it's a great time to ask, like, they talk about when the PGA Tour, generally speaking, let's say 9 times out of 10, when a guy wins on the PGA Tour, the money doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It's the status. Like, it's not life-changing money. You know, when the ladies win, it's technically could be life-changing money for most people. Was that the case for you?
Yes and no. Like, I had a semi-good year last year, but, like, of course, like, it's expensive to do what we do. Like, we, you know, we can't afford to fly private jet. Like, we... The thing that people don't understand is, like, we don't have the resources that the men do. You know, like, we can't fly private jet. We can't fly our families out every week. Like,
you have
we
to
don't
have Dez
have
as your caddy.
Yeah, like, I've got to hire people like Dez. You know what I mean? Like,
delinquents. Yeah.
Like, people don't understand, like, you know, we don't have the resources that the men do, and yet we still do this good of a job. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, we have to fight for every single thing that we get.
I mean, if you finish 80th on the LPGA money list, let's say even the last 3 or 4 years, that's probably worth, I could be wrong, about $150,000 or $160,000. And that's an impressive number to look at. But when you break it all down, that player is going to maybe profit $10,000 or $20,000. Like, and obviously, you know, the viewership and the TV rights are where they are. But I just think, I do think you'll see a trend in the next 4 or 5 years of an appreciation for how good the girls are and hopefully a return.
Like with the fight that we have.
Yeah. It's a great product to watch. And obviously I'm fortunate enough to watch it front row every week, but it's definitely something in my opinion that deserves a lot more respect. And I am optimistically hopeful that in the next 4 or 5 years, you're really going to see that.
Like as soon as you get on the PGA Tour, like you sign deals that make you financially secure for the year. Like if you miss every single cut, you're making $200,000-$300,000. It's not the same on the LPGA. Like you have to grind every single
really
week.
Really got
to
fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, I got to get my minimums up then if my guy's making two. Yeah. I'm underselling myself.
So Mel, what do you think? I mean, the Solheim Cup has obviously brought a lot of visibility to, you know, the game. I won't say just the women's game. I mean, the game in general. How important has that event been for you? And how important do you think it is for the game in general to make it bigger and have more recognition for the women?
I mean, it's my favorite event, honestly. Like, of all the events that I play in, it's Solheim's, like, my jam. Like, I love it. I love the energy from it. I love the team atmosphere. Like, it's so important for women's golf because, you know, it's competitive. Like, the Americans want to kick our ass and we want to kick their ass. Like, it's just, you know, fight for fight. And it's one of the most, like, spectacular sporting events, like, male or female, that you'll ever go to. Like, it's kind of the same with Ryder Cup, right? Like, the boys love playing Ryder Cup. Like, we feel exactly the same. And I think it's so important for women's golf, honestly, because we get so much, like, exposure. Like, we do get TV time. We get so many fans there. Like, the energy there is,
until you go,
it's always and just... everyone plays their best that week. Like, honestly, everyone plays so good.
There's no hiding in the Solheim. Like, it's just a great product.
What about you, Dez? Obviously, that's got to be a bucket list item for you to be out on at the Solheim. Like, you've done the Olympics and all the majors, but that's the one that's you haven't got to, correct?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, me and Mel make individual goals for the season, and even though you make those individual goals week to week, you just try to do your best. But obviously for me, that would be great to see us play Solheim. I feel like that's obviously an atmosphere that Mel has thrived in on her own in the past, but you know, obviously I'd be lying if I said we haven't built a really strong team dynamic, and I would love to be a part of it. Obviously I have a lot of American golfer friends, but being from Canada, I'd be lying if I say I wasn't always cheering for Europe and the Solheim before I got out here, and now being a part of it. So it's certainly something that's on our goal list, and you know, that's a long ways away, and good play will take care of itself, but it would certainly be something I have looked forward to and would love to be a part of.
The other way that, you know, we can grow the product and get people watching is trying different things with the telecast. Would both of you be up for being mic'd for 4 rounds
at
an LPGA Tour event? How much money would you need to be paid?
It wouldn't be a money thing. We would need a 10-second delay. I mean, we obviously have a great relationship, and the trust is clearly there on both of us. But we never get mad at each other on the course. But, you know, just it's our nature.
I don't want to expose Dez like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to expose him to all his mistakes. Like, I don't want to be so public that he gets embarrassed by it.
Now, here's the question. Do you allow him to read the greens for you? It's been noted on this podcast.
Only one round.
He lost a bet, and he had to wear a gold thong, and that's the only time I've ever asked him to read greens.
So when I came here for quarantine before the Ohio events, obviously my Canadian personality came out. We had a little wager how many beers I could finish. It was a number close to 20, and I just lost. Ironically enough, the bet was that if I won, we would get mic'd up for a round, because obviously my parents watch the golf all the time. I thought they'd like that, and fortunately, if I lost, I had to wear a pretty much a stripper gold thong.
I got it in small, thinking it'd be too big for him, but I was actually surprisingly mistaken.
I was riding halfway down my bump crack. So I probably, in tournaments, like, I never get asked for a specific read. We've been together 10 events. Occasionally we'll talk about, like, if the putt, like, is more downhill than we think, more uphill than we think. But ironically, in this practice round in Portland, when it was my time to pay up and wear the thong. I'd read, we played nine holes in the practice round, and apparently I had to read nine putts.
Wow.
We had a couple 6-footers that day that were just, you know, 3 or 4 feet right to left. Because I wasn't going to give her honest reads. I'm like, are you fucking serious, dude? Like, yeah, it's like three
flags. So is this the true story of what happened in Portland and why things didn't work out? It's all because of Dev?
The thong wasn't in the
tournament. Yeah, he was scratching his ass the whole fun round. I was like, bro, can you just focus for 1 second?
I'm like, this is your fault. Like,
dude, you only had to wear it for the practice round. I don't know why you're still wearing it.
No.
Maybe he is.
What if, here's the thing, Dez, you're a hockey guy, so you're superstitious. If you would have won in Portland, would
that's
it
what
be,
said.
You'd
yeah,
be
no,
wearing
no,
it every day.
I did say that to her. I was like, if we, like, it wasn't an actual, like, talking about winning the event, because, you know, you go out each day just trying to do your best, but I was, like, joking. I was like, if you win this week, I clearly got to wear this every week, and she's like, yeah, obviously.
All right, so we have a game. You guys like to make bets. So what we're going to do is we're going to put a bet on it, and we'll just say it's a shot. Whoever does worse has to take a shot out of you two, and we'll let the listeners trust that this happened. So Scott put together a game.
Okay, we'll honor it.
All right.
I've worn a thong, so I'll honor it.
Right, so Scott put together a game. I'll let him explain the game, and then may the best man or woman win.
Okay,
so here's what we're gonna do. Okay, there you go.
Fair enough.
Here's what we're gonna do. Just because we're gonna honor sort of the Canadian side of things, the English side of things, we've got the names of 5 hockey teams that could be real or fake, and those are gonna be for Mel to decide whether they're real or fake.
Oh, and so do I have to bet on if she gets them right?
No, hold on. Settle down there.
we'll just see how many she gets, whether they're right or wrong. And then for Dez, we've got 5 English football clubs, whether they're real or fake, as far as the names are concerned.
I will double down the game for 2 shots, Mel, if you're down that I win this game.
Wow.
Fine.
No. Okay. Here we go.
Do you want to go back and forth, or Mel, do you want to do all 5, or what do we want
to
do?
I'll do all 5.
All right, we'll do all 5. All right, so Mel, these are either past or present NHL pro hockey teams, but they are names, and you can tell us whether you think it's real or fake.
Okay.
All right, we'll start off with the Halifax Mooseheads. Real or fake?
I'm not helping you.
I think it's real.
Oh, shit.
It is real.
It is real.
1-for-1. Nice job.
Okay.
All right. Next, the California Golden Seals.
Fake.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it was real.
I'm not looking at her anymore.
All right. 1-for-2.
She read me on the first one.
Number 3, South Dakota Salamanders. Fake. Oh, no, don't look for help.
Okay. Fake.
I honestly don't know this answer. I feel like it's sneaky real.
That's a fake one.
Oh! 2-1. Oh, okay.
All right. The Austin Ice Bats.
Real.
It is real. Wow.
Carly's helping her. Carly, you must be on Google quick. No, you're not. No looking at Carly.
She's texting her on the go.
No looking at Carly for this one.
Okay, all right. Last one here.
Oh, no.
The Amarillo Gorillas.
Fake.
It's got to be real.
It's real.
Yes!
All right, that's 3-for-5.
Okay.
3-for-5. Right, that's pretty good.
That is good.
I would have guessed the Austin Ice Bats to be fake myself.
Me
I've never
too.
Heard of them, but.
CHL, Central Hockey League.
All right,
Dez, are you ready? We got 5 football clubs from England. You good to go?
Yes.
We're going to throw you a softball first, because you should be able to get this one.
Okay.
Tottenham Hotspurs.
They are real.
That's a Premier League team.
He laid you up on at the start, too.
He didn't. If he said Dallas, I was like, oh, that's probably fake. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, all right. We may have to come up with a bonus one here. All right, the Reading Biscuit Men.
Fake.
No, it's not real.
It's not. It's real.
Oh.
It's real.
Biscuit Man? What is that? Are they sponsored by friggin' IHOP or something?
Carry on.
Okay. English no biscuits. Come on.
No.
The Chelsea High Sox.
Fake.
It is fake.
Yes.
Good job. All right. This one's
This is a battle.
All right. The Derby Roses.
Nope. They're the Derby Rams.
Wow. He pays attention.
Team. That was a layup. Okay. So.
Now, do you even recognize the significance of that?
Am I 3-1? Is this for the win?
This is for the tie. Oh wait, you got
no,
it right.
I'm 3-1.
This is for the win. Yeah.
Come on.
The Honiton Town Hippos.
Oh yeah, be real. It's too fake not to be real.
Wow, Dez wins.
It's real.
Mel is
it real?
Up.
It was too fake not to be real. Did I win?
You win. Mel will be taking 2 shots of Fireball after the podcast.
Bring Mel back down to 1 because getting California Golden Seals was a
getting Tottenham Hotspur was the worst.
Yeah, that was the worst stuff. Even I, that was like giving me the putter on 18 at ShopRite and being like, Dez, even you could make this. I was like,
let's slow like, down. Are you reading it yourself too, or does Mel read it?
Only with his thong.
Well, we really appreciate both of you coming on. Mel, we hope you enjoy your shot of whatever Dez gives you.
Can't wait.
We were cheering for you. It's been 87 episodes since we sat literally right here, Dez, and did the first episode of this podcast. I mean it when I say we would not be here without you today, so we're proud of you. Mel, we're proud of you as well. Thank you both. Here's to many more in the future, and we can't wait to meet up at the pub in a few months, hopefully, when all this is over.
All right. Thank you so much, boys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Thank you, Dez and Mel, for a great interview. They lived up to it. We've been hoping for the two of them for a while. The party has yet to stop. I don't see it stopping anytime soon, but I don't see the bad play stopping anytime soon. They've both had a hell of a year, and clearly that partnership's working.
Yeah, it's been an incredible run. Obviously, you've been playing well, and certainly I think, you know, as we talked about in the interview, you know, a lot of people are in their corner. It's been great to see. It's been fun to follow their success, and we certainly thank them for coming on and giving us a few laughs, that's for sure.
That's 100% for sure. Well, this week, the PGA Tour is at the CJ Cup. Usually, this is their swing out in Asia. Unfortunately, not happening due to COVID-19. What are your thoughts about them playing this at Shadow Creek? They actually sent a lot of the caddies out to get around it prior. I noticed our boy Peppers was out on the course, so kind of cool. And it's a pretty nice golf course, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing because it's really built in, you know, inside of a, you know, housing development really is what's all around it. And it's really this exclusive piece of land that's out there. And Tom Fazio built this exclusive golf course. Obviously, we saw it in the match with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. It'll be fun on TV. It's a limited field event, 78 players, I believe. We've got 4 Canadians in the field, Mackenzie Hughes, Adam Hadwin, Corey Connors, and Nick Taylor. So it'll be fun to watch there. All the great players. Unfortunately, as we know, Dustin Johnson is not going to be there, but Brooks Koepka is back, and it'll be good to see the top players start to battle again as we get ready for the Masters in another month.
Yeah, I saw a piece on Dustin Johnson earlier, and it said something along, it's rare for the tour to actually release his test results. I have no idea what that means, but yeah, maybe I'll look into that
I'm not touching that one.
After I'm done here. Well, we're going to leave it at that this week. No mailbag this week. No other games. We wanted our feature interview to be with Mel and Dez. They deserve it. We will be back next week, that's for sure. We're going to keep on trucking. 87 episodes, as I said in that interview. We've had 85 episodes between the first one we sat down here in my basement. We called the studio with Dez to, you know, COVID, to caddying. Like, it's crazy to see how far we've come. And I just hope we have another, you know, 2 years of episodes ahead. It's a fun part of both of our weeks, and you know, I think we're not doing it for the money. Let's say that.
No, it's a lot of fun. Enjoy it. Some great interviews, and we hopefully all the listeners enjoy it as well. And you know, we'll still keep working hard to get some fun guests on here. We might have another one. Who knows? From that particular interview, there might have been a roommate hanging around. But you know, there's lots of other players that are on our list that we're going to try to get on the show, and we're looking forward to more podcasts.
All right. Well, until the next week, make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends. We appreciate it. We're going to keep on growing. I got to go. I got to eat some dinner. Scotty, tacos are waiting for me. It's Taco Tuesday, so it's time for me to wrap it up here. We hope you enjoy this episode. We'll chat with you next week.
just some ocean in a day like today. My boat's lost in the ocean.